This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Finally, a full week of work.
Absolutely.
And a number of little snippets to start, because, of course, there is still a lot of substantial stuff to talk about. Unfortunately, we have to start with football. Because of this drama that went down yesterday at Bloomfield Stadium in the derby match between Hapoel Tel Aviv and Maccabi Tel Aviv. In the end, the game was abandoned. Smoke bombs and all kinds of stones being thrown, people injured, police injured. In the end, the police decided to call off the match because of public safety issues. But of course, this doesn't help Israel's cause on the international stage when protesting against the decision by the police in the West Midlands to ban Maccabi Tel Aviv fans from attending the game against Aston Villa, because even though the two issues are really unrelated and the reality is that Israeli fans don't necessarily have a reputation of being violent in foreign stadiums or even at home. I mean, there is a certain level of football violence, but in general, things are quite under control. So, of course, the international press have really seized this as justification for the police decision in Birmingham to ban Maccabi Tel Aviv fans from attending that game. Very, very unfortunate. And the timing could not be any worse. So not a moment to be proud of for Israeli football. And, of course, we have to talk about the hostages have returned home and the stories that are coming out. And even if I had to tell you a little snippet about the hostages every day for the next year, I still wouldn't really be able to get through all of the stories that are coming out from their time in captivity. But there is one kind of theme that has emerged from a number of different hostages, which I think is worth mentioning. And that is the element of clinging on to their Judaism and to their Jewish identity, particularly while in captivity. And a number of different stories. First of all, there was a hostage who said that he fasted on Yom Kippur while in captivity for the first time in his life.
Oh, my word.
Now, go figure how one comes to that sort of a conclusion when Dafka, one would have said that, yeah, exactly. And so usually the rules of Yom Kippur say if there is an issue of pikuach nefesh, of saving a life, then you shouldn't fast. And that certainly would have applied in the dungeons of Gaza without a shadow of a doubt. I'm not sure how many rabbis would contradict me when I say that is pikuach nefesh, that is saving a life in the of the highest order. And yet there were hostages who fasted Yom Kippur. Now, here's a story which really caught me by surprise, and that was Matan Angrist. He said that he requested from his captors in Gaza a set of tefillin, a sidur, and a chumash. He requested the boxes that we put on our head and our arm when we pray in the morning, and a prayer book and a Bible. And he was given those three items.
What?
And he laid his tefillin every single day while he was captive in Gaza. Every single day he put them on to retain his Jewish identity. And just as a related story, one of the things that I didn't realize was that there was a campaign for people to wear the tefillin of those who were captured in Gaza while they were away. People went to their homes, picked up their tefillin, and they made sure that those tefillin were used every single day while those hostages were in Gaza, just to keep the connection somehow, to keep them in use, to kind of a sign of life, because when someone dies, as a general rule, they are buried with their tefillin. And of course, their tefillin were being used every single day to sort of somehow try to preserve the concept of life. And Matan Angrist was actually given tefillin in Gaza, and he used them every single day. Rombas Braslavsky says that he was convinced every day to convert to Islam. And he was bribed with extra food rations if he agreed to convert to Islam. And every day and every time he refused, even though he knew that he would be fed better if he agreed to it. And yet he insisted every single time not to accede to the demand that he convert to Islam. And as soon as he came out of Gaza, he also put on a pair of tefillin, put on his set of tefillin, and he said that for him, knowing that he was the only Jew amongst that crowd that he was being held with, gave him a sense of not only identity, but he felt better for himself. He felt better. He liked the idea that he was the Jew, and the reason that he was there was because he was Jewish. That sort of gave him a reinforcement, a kind of a strength in his resolve, which I found very, very fascinating. To listen to as all of these stories come out. More to be told for sure.
It is, it's absolutely astounding. All right, so let's talk about where we are in terms of the ceasefire agreement. Israel today is apparently trying to reinstate the ceasefire agreement. This comes after a day when two IDF soldiers were killed and three others injured in a number of attacks by Hamas on IDF troops. Is the ceasefire sustainable?
Well, I think that the ceasefire is probably sustainable for now. And it's quite interesting just to get a picture of what's been going on, because what we do know is that since the IDF troops withdrew to the so-called yellow line, which is now the new kind of ceasefire line that's been drawn in Gaza, the IDF troops had to withdraw from some of the areas that they were operating in as part of the ceasefire, and they've drawn what we call the yellow line. And that, once we withdrew to the yellow line, Hamas immediately came out of the tunnels. And as Amit Segal said so well, he said, Hamas seemed to be the only power where, when there's war, their uniforms are off. And as soon as their ceasefire comes into existence, the uniforms come back on again. They crept out of the tunnels. They try to enforce some discipline in the areas where the IDF troops had withdrawn from. In particular, the Dagmush clan were systematically annihilated. They were seen to be one of those clans that could potentially rule Gaza in the future, which are opposed to Hamas, and Hamas came out immediately to try to assert their control over those areas where the IDF had withdrawn from. And yesterday we saw in the area of Rafah, Hamas operatives coming out of tunnels and attacking IDF forces, even though the ceasefire has been declared and the IDF have really respected all elements of the ceasefire. So the question is asked as to whether the ceasefire is something real and whether this can really be relied upon. Now, what I will say about the ceasefire is, first of all, that it's returned 20 live hostages.
Absolutely.
And we can't underestimate that. That also means that whatever happens from here on now is on a different level. It's a kind of a different war now, because yesterday we saw that when the IDF responded to these Hamas attacks, they were able to bomb tunnels right away that previously they'd been very reluctant to attack because they were afraid that hostages were being kept there. So this puts the war on a very, very different footing. The other point is that President Trump has come out saying that, oh, this was just kind of renegade elements of Hamas who are not adhering to the ceasefire. I'm not sure about that. We saw Hamas's intentions very, very clearly when they were attacking the Dagmush clan and when they were trying to assert their control over areas that the IDF have withdrawn. So I think that Hamas has an intention to reassert their control over Gaza as quickly as possible. Now, one of the really smart things about this ceasefire agreement is that it really was only signed to cover the first element of the agreement, which is release the hostages, release the dead bodies. In exchange for that, Palestinian prisoners are returned to Gaza, food aid to come into Gaza, and of course the withdrawal of the IDF troops. That's what has been signed on. The rest, the remaining 20 points, or the remaining points in the 20-point plan, have not been signed on. And I think that that's given Hamas a certain belief that things might not quite work out according to those 20 points. So whether the ceasefire is really sustainable, I think remains to be seen. But as Israelis, I would say we've already benefited tremendously by the return of those 20 hostages. And unfortunately, only 12 bodies out of the 28, but at least those 12 are home now.
Absolutely.
Of which two are foreign citizens, one from Nepal and one from Thailand, whose bodies have been returned home. Well, we will see what happens next in the next stages of this particular ceasefire.
So let's talk about the further 16 that haven't yet been returned. Trump seems to be says he is slightly sympathetic, whether he is allowing Hamas a little bit of leeway. He seems to be a little bit sympathetic towards, not sympathetic, but understanding of the difficulty in retrieving the some of the other remains of the hostages. How real is that? What do we know?
Well, I think that some of it is real, but I think that also at some degree it's also manufactured. I mean, it's true that President Trump is cutting Hamas a bit of slack here by saying, oh, it's very difficult to retrieve the bodies, and they're doing their best. You know, and Jared Kushner has also made a statement saying that he thinks that Hamas are acting in good faith to retrieve the bodies. I think that they are purposefully holding some of those bodies back. I also believe that some of them may well be difficult to retrieve. As of now, we know that there are 16 bodies still being held in Gaza. 14 of them are Israelis. Two of them are foreign nationals who were killed, one from Tanzania and one from Thailand, I believe, who were agricultural workers in the kibbutzim around the Gaza Strip on October the 7th, and their bodies are also being held in Gaza. So we are fighting equally for those foreign nationals as we are for the Israelis to come home. And they have been coming home in dribs and drabs, and everybody, of course, is very, very valuable to us. So we shouldn't do anything now to potentially disrupt the return of the remaining bodies. I do believe that there's a certain amount of psychological warfare being played here. But while there is still a flow of bodies coming home, I think we are obliged to try to encourage that. And hence, I think, there is another reason why, in spite of those two soldiers being killed yesterday in Rafah and others being quite seriously injured in those attacks, I think the IDF are still, or Israel is still, very inclined to try to push forward with a ceasefire. Naturally, the US administration are pressuring a lot for Israel to try to maintain the ceasefire. US officials will arrive in Israel today, tomorrow. Jared Kushner, Steve Witkoff are due to arrive today, and J.D. Vance is due to arrive tomorrow. And we understand that the plan is that they will begin to negotiate and to discuss the next phases of this particular ceasefire arrangement. I think therein lies the difficulty, because I have very, very little doubt that Hamas have no intention of relinquishing their control over Gaza, and Hamas have no intention of giving up their arms. And those are two critical points in the 20-point plan. But, you know, that's a discussion for another day. And if Hamas refuse to adhere to those points, I think that the Trump administration will support Israel in forcing it. In fact, President Trump has said, if Hamas don't give up their arms, we will course then. Those were his words that he used. And of course, then he went on to say, well, not us, but our proxies, being Israel, will force them to give up those arms. So I don't know that we can declare the end of the war so quickly. I think there is still some time, some water to flow under this bridge. But we are certainly in interesting times right now. And as I say, with the return of our hostages, the game has changed substantially.
That is where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. You can catch Anthony tomorrow morning for the Israel Report at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.